everybody across the land. Here's a special from Sequel Cast, though I don't know what it's gonna be about. Maybe Woody Allen, maybe Spike Lee, maybe Technicolor, maybe 3D, or maybe you just gotta wait and see. 'Cause you're gonna find out after this theme. This Sequel Cast special is a go. This Sequel Cast special is a go. What's it gonna be about? What's it gonna be about? What's it gonna be about? Who knows?
Hello and welcome to Sequel Cast Special. Sequel Cast Special takes a look at movie topics at large. It's a podcast. Our website is at sequelcast.com. The theme song you just heard is by Mark with a C. Check out his website at markwithac.com. This time around on Sequel Cast Special, we are looking at the career of comic actor Mike Myers. With me,
that is an interesting choice.
What, saying comic actor?
Well, no, just that we've. I don't think we've ever done a sequel cast about a specific person before.
We haven't. No, we did a sequel cast special on Mel Brooks.
Oh, you're right.
But
Never mind.
Not an actor here. But
I stand corrected.
I think we have to start over.
Nope, that's Thrasher, and and there's also a good old Georgia Jason we haven't had on in a while.
Just keep it Jersey Jason.
Jason.
I hate this state.
Okay, you do?
I'm so done with it.
Jersey Jason.
I should just move to Canada, where Michael Myers is from.
Yeah, there you go. Jersey Jason. The website, again, for Sequel Cast is sequelcast.com. You can check out all the episodes of Sequel Cast Special and our other shows, Sequel Cast, Sequel Commentary, and Video Game Sequel Cast over there. And you can check out the Facebook page at facebook.com/sequelcast. So, Mike Myers. The first time I ever saw him would have had to been him on Saturday Night Live doing Wayne's World.
That's probably the case with all of us, actually.
I really wonder, because I never really watched SNL until it was on Comedy Central.
Hmm. Okay.
As a kid, I never really stayed up Saturday night to watch anything like the... Again, one of the funniest things about Wayne's World, that was one of the last sketches on that show's night.
Yeah, it had that last second-to-last sketch, Death Slot.
Yeah, that's what it's called. It's called the Death Slot. It's like, well, this doesn't mean anything. This isn't going to get laughs. We'll just throw it on because it's something that we have.
When he was on a Saturday Night Live for quite some time, from 1989 through 1995.
Yeah, he had a good long run.
Yeah, he was brought on by, it's actually really interesting to say, Lorne Michaels. Mike Myers was from Ontario. And so was Lorne Michaels.
Well, you know what they say? It's a place to stand.
Is it?
It's a place to grow. They call this land Ontario. A place to stand, a place to grow, Ontario.
What's that from? I don't recognize that.
I think that's the actual song for Ontario.
Oh, okay.
Jim Carrey, when Jim Carrey was on Conan O'Brien many, many years ago, he kept doing throughout the entire video, he would keep breaking out into that song, and it would get bigger and more elaborate every time he did it, until finally he's riding on Conan's back as they run across the stage, each with a microphone singing that song.
Let's do a special on Jim Carrey.
Right now!
Could do that in the future, not right now, but yeah, that would be another good person to do it on. I mean, so, yeah, Mike Myers
again,
played...
talking about Saturday Night Live.
Right.
I mean, Michael Myers, probably the first time anybody saw him was on SNL.
Well, you know, it just occurred to me, I just remembered exactly when and where I first saw him.
Hmm.
Where is that?
My family was at the Main Gate Theater. We were going to see the Addams Family movie. There was one last trailer after the trailers that made it look like the movie was starting, because it was all these panning shots of a spooky cemetery, and then the Addams Family theme starts playing and the fingers start snapping. Then the camera pulls back and it's Wayne and Garth in a cemetery.
Hmm.
And they, hey, I guess you guys are expecting to see the Addams Family, and they talk about the movie. There's no clips from the movie. It's just them in a cemetery talking about the movie. and then Wayne's World, and then the actual movie starts.
See, and that's also weird, is that Wayne's World, again, coming from the death slot, became a movie, and really one of the most successful movies spun off from an SNL sketch, which there were a bunch. That's Pat, or It's Pat, or
yeah.
Something about Pat.
I think it was just called It's Pat, although that was much later. That was because that was the thing, is we hadn't had an SNL movie for a while, and Wayne's World was such a hit that a lot of foolish choices were made over the next 10 years, bringing SNL sketches to the screen.
No, wait. Now what's the question though? What's the first one?
Was it Blues Brothers? Was it
Blues Brothers?
Yeah, I guess it was.
Yeah.
And actually, that prompted a conversation amongst the men in our family about how every generation gets one good SNL movie.
Well,
they don't do it that much anymore. I mean, MacGruber, that was a few years ago. But
MacGruber, also a superstar.
But there's still quite, it wasn't like quite like the 90s when they were really pumping out the SNL movies.
True.
I mean, also in the early 2000s, Mike Myers had in development a film based off of his SNL character, Dieter,
host
of Sprockets, and it never got off the ground.
I want to read that script.
He wrote the script. They were all set to go, and then he decided the script wasn't quite up to snuff and, you know, decided not to do it, and then managed
to get anybody,
sued.
I want to know from our fans, anybody actually laugh at a Dieter sketch?
I think it's more the accent than what he's saying, but
I think that's of such a time, again, East and West Berlin, before the wall came down. Oh, those glorious times.
Well, yeah, I guess, like, the Dieter thing, that's one of those sketches that it's not as if anyone's actually seen any German television. You just kind of have to be able to buy into the premise to really enjoy it. Although I loved that Dieter's Dream short film.
Oh, God, yes.
You remember that?
Oh,
you
know, yes. Ew.
No, I don't.
I am a whore. I am a nun. I'm a whore nun.
German expressionism, it's
it was great.
Again, will it get them off their tractors?
So, I mean, yeah, Wayne's World was a really big deal when it came out.
It took America by storm.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was the most successful, yeah, it was among the most successful movies of that year. Was that 92, 91?
It'd be 92, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and again, it's like, how do you take a sketch and evolve it into like a full-length motion picture? I mean, why do that in the first place?
Well, I mean, I guess it just, it grew rapidly enough out of that death slot. Lauren Michaels,
well, actually,
probably figured, I better strike while the iron's hot.
Funny enough that you say that, I'm almost convinced that because of SAG rules, he can't be Michael Myers. Because there's already a Michael Myers.
So he's credited as Mike Myers?
Yes.
Really now?
Now that is my theory, because there's a whole point of, if you are an actor and there's another actor who has the same name, you can't be billed as that person, or else people will get IMDb's confused.
Well, I know it's that way with writing credits. You have to be registered under a different name. That's why David S. Cohen is always credited as David X. Cohen, because there's already an S. Cohen.
Yes.
This has been Guild Chat.
So again, Myers and Dana Carvey, and I read that Dana Carvey did not really like Wayne's World, nor did he like filming the movie. I don't know. There's a lot of talk about how there was a lot of tension between the director, Michael Myers, Dana Carvey, when they were making the movie. Because it's hard, because I guess I wonder if it was because Dana Carvey was such an auxiliary character. He really didn't have that much of a character arc. I think in the second one he did more, but there's nothing really about Garth in the movie.
Yeah, I mean, he is, in the first film, he is clearly the second banana.
There's some clever jokes in there with, like, the dog, the lassie that has his hair cut, and there's some things in there, but he's basically stuck in a best friend slot.
Well, I mean, they recently reunited like a Wayne's World, like 20-year anniversary thing where the director and Mike Myers made up. I mean, the director, Penelope Spheeris, I guess, got into a big, you know, didn't really get along with Mike Myers very well, and that's why she wasn't asked to come back and direct the sequel. And
also, Mike Myers, I mean, he was his creation. It was his idea. I mean, he had all rights to say what he wanted from the movie, but he wasn't a producer. It was Lorne Michaels who was the producer. Michael Myers was still just the star and the writer. It's so hard when you're a writer to then see how somebody else takes your stuff, unless you're doing every single slot.
Right.
Lose a little bit of control.
And I think
he was a perfectionist enough that he didn't want to lose the control.
Sure, and I think, you know, Mike Myers probably had more control doing his next film, So I Married an Axe Murderer.
Which is probably my favorite Michael Myers movie.
You know what? I love that movie, too. There's some good jokes in that. It's the first time that he plays a second character in a movie.
Oh, yeah.
He plays his own father in that.
Right.
With prosthetic makeup with and a heavy Irish accent. Yeah.
Irish, yeah.
And wait, isn't Alan Arkin's in that?
He is. Yeah, no, I haven't seen it. I haven't seen it in a while.
He plays the best friend is a cop. He plays the boss who the friend wants to be more like the cops that he sees on TV because he's too nice.
I love that conceit that he wants to be a movie cop, but everyone in his life is so not a movie cop supporting character. Even like that, when I just chewed you out, was that right? Did that work?
Oh God! Again,
get yourself a coffee. No, it's just such a great. It's all around a great movie. It has everything I love: references to classic cartoons, axe murders, secret identities, a handful of over the top characters and performances, thick Scottish accents,
and poetry.
Yes.
The beat poetry, right? And
oh God, that was such a weird. Who expects that in the movie?
Well, I love that all of his poems have the same exact structure.
Betty,
yeah.
Judy, Josie, and those hot pussy cats. They make me horny Saturday morning. These morning cartoons will leave me in ruins. I've got to be Betty's Bonnie. Jane, get me off this crazy thing called love. I memorized that as a kid. What year was that? 93?
93,
I would have been 11.
Oh, wow.
I fucking memorized that.
But isn't it a great poem?
Oh, God, yeah.
Like, I totally want to go to an open mic and do that and see if anybody notices.
We should try that. I mean, the soundtrack to So I Married an Axe Murderer 2 is very much of the early 90s. You have Two Princes by the Spin Doctors.
Oh.
And There She Goes by Boo Radley's.
The original There She Goes, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, God, yeah.
One of my favorite songs.
But I mean, after that...
It also had him in a romantic lead.
Right, sure. So he's toned down. He's not, you know, wacky cartoon all the time.
And then he goes back to do Wayne's World 2.
Oh, geez. Yeah. Wayne's World 2 I've only seen once. I didn't see it when it came out. I mean, this came out in 93. They really bumped this out really fast.
It was just too joke-heavy, too idea-full. But none of the ideas really gel. There's a thing where Wayne has to fight his girlfriend's father, Tia Carrera.
Yeah, the karate scene.
By,
yep.
Oh, God. It was the same guy who played...
David Lopan?
Yes, thank you, Lopan. It's the same guy who played Lopan.
Oh, yeah. No, actually, that is probably the high point of that movie for me. I had, at that point in my life, I had never laughed so hard in a theater as I did during the elaborate kung fu sequence.
Oh, see, and again, that actually might have been... I'm wondering if that was the first... That can't be the first thing that I ever saw. No, it cannot be the first thing that I ever saw Christopher Walken on.
Oh, yeah, he's in that. You're right.
Yeah, he plays the bad guy.
Uh-huh.
The villain in the first movie is Rob Lowe.
That's right.
He's just sexy and awesome and evil. You had Noah's Arcade. And then you had a Wayne's World 2. You had the record executive who's trying to get Tia Carrera's band. Oh, shit. What was the name of the girlfriend in it?
Cassandra.
So, because of all the jokes they had to do with her name and the songs and, oh, wow. And boy, was she hot in that.
And, of course, all the stuff with Jim Morrison.
Yes. Jim Morrison.
Which, as I look back, when I watch the movie now, makes so much more sense to me.
Yeah, I didn't know who he was. I had not seen The Doors before I saw that movie, so I didn't understand why there was an Indian.
You follow the weird naked Indian.
I am an Indian. I also represent death.
No, Jim, no.
I also represent death. Oh, God.
For those of you keeping score, that last bit was a reference to the Ben Stiller Show sketch, Oliver Stone World, the theme park career of Oliver Stone.
But featuring then, cartoon characters, again, what comes after Wayne's World 2?
Austin Powers.
Yeah, I mean, well, this is something Mike Myers does a lot in his career, is he takes a really long break before doing something. I mean, the break between Wayne's World 2 and Austin Powers was like 4 years, and this was, a few years after he had been on Saturday Night Live. He, you know, left SNL in 95, and this Austin Powers, the first one, International Man of Mystery, came out in 97.
Yeah, and that's another one of my, the original Austin Powers is another one of my favorite movies, and it seems so stale now simply because it's been referenced, ripped off, and done to death in two sequels. And yet, when this movie came out, it was a thoroughly original comedic film, even if it was heavily inspired by lots of classic spy movies.
Yeah, it's pretty neat what, just the music, I mean, the way the character and the movie was like really successful, I think, was a real surprise. And I mean, the first one did well, but the second one is when it really got popular.
You know what it is? It's people love a catchphrase. If you have a good catchphrase in a movie, it's going to do well.
And Mike Myers is big on catchphrases.
Yeah, baby. Now,
do you think his catchphrases are intentional, or is it just something that, like, is it calculated, or is it something that just naturally comes out of his creative process?
Well, it's repeated by the
world.
It's repeated by the characters several times. It's not like,
but also look at Wayne's World, guys.
Right.
I mean, Schwing.
Yeah.
What else? Schwing's the one that comes to mind. The jokes about babes, Abraham Lincoln.
Right.
Babesaurus Rex. Oh my God! But I'm trying to think of another.
Speaking about Wayne's World. About Wayne's World 2, I remember I was in the theater, I was watching, it might have been like The Addams Family or Hook or something like that, and there was a trailer for Wayne's World 2, and in it, Wayne is making a joke to Garth about pubes, and Garth doesn't get it. And meanwhile, I think I was like 8 years old or something, and I didn't get the joke. I was laughing because Wayne and Garth were laughing on screen in this trailer, and I don't think my mom or dad got the joke either. Or maybe they did. There's just an awkward silence.
It's hard when your parents are sitting there and you're, I don't know.
And you're a little kid and this big, you know, this big trailer is up in the theater. I didn't go home and say, Mommy, what is pubes? I had some restraint.
I'm just imagining that humorous conversation. Let's engage in a little bit of role play.
Okay.
I'll be Matt. Jason. You be Matt's parents, and Matt, you be Rod Serling.
The year, 1993. The place, a car drive. Coming home from the movie theater, after watching a trailer for Wayne's World 2.
Mommy, why did we leave the theater after only seeing the trailer?
We'll tell you when you're older.
Okay, well, as long as I have your attention, what is pubes?
Shut up.
Okay, I'll remember that. If I ever talk too much, I'll just remember to pubes.
back to Mike Myers talk. You know, I think before...
How's your psyche now, Matt?
It's crushed. I don't know why that is the one thing I remember. But it just stuck out to me. I don't know why. The awkward silence and humor.
Here's another thing. For that movie...
Uh-huh.
For Austin Powers,
yes.
People who didn't understand like the whole time period, who weren't around then, but also people who, I guess, I don't think I was into Bond before Austin Powers. I didn't really understand like all the spy movies. I got some of the tropes.
Mm-hmm.
I would have been, 97? I would have been 15, 16. I understood the tropes of it. I think I knew more about the Avengers, Tweed and Peele, than anything else, Nick Fury. So I never understood. I wonder what they were thinking. Why would this be popular all of a sudden?
Well, as I understand it, it didn't do that well at the box office. What made the money that got the sequel greenlit was that it exploded on DVD and home video.
Oh.
It was a movie that nobody saw, but everyone wanted to own.
Well, also at the time, I mean, VHSs weren't as expensive as they were when they first came out.
Right, it was like $20 for a video
tape.
Top Gun
was like $50. Yeah.
Yeah.
Random was cheaper.
Oh, sure.
You talk about Bond. The thing that I love about Austin Powers is that it's not just limited to Bond. It runs the whole gamut of spy movies. There is reference to the Flynn movies. There's reference to the Avengers. There's references to Diabolique and all these other sort of spy and hip campy noir things. And it's just so, if you know those things, you realize how sort of genre literate this movie was.
I also didn't know who Burt Bacharach was until that movie.
Yeah, that was the other nice thing. It really sort of loved that time period.
And it used some of the same kind of special effects, like when they're driving.
Oh yeah, the rear
always
projection.
The screen behind. Yeah, projection. That's such a thing of that time. Now that I understood after a while, like how the effect worked, to see it in other movies, but to see it in such a contemporary movie is jarring.
Well,
I think that was done on purpose.
Yeah, and you look at some of the clothes of Austin Powers and you think, oh, that's really over the top. But if you go back to some of the old James Bond films, specifically On Her Majesty's Secret Service, it's not so far from what they had in some of the old movies.
You know what's funny? When I first saw the Austin Powers poster, before I had heard or seen anything about the movie, and there's just that giant Michael Myers on there in costume, I couldn't figure out what it was.
Yeah.
I honestly thought, for some reason, he was playing the mother from the Partridge Family, but with glasses.
Oh, God, that's right.
he looks just like her.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, one Austin Powers scene I would have loved to have watched. I remember, you know, one of the first DVDs I bought was this one for Austin Powers, International Man of Mystery. And they have the commentary, and they talk about how Michael York, who plays Basil Exposition, had improvised a 30-minute scene that's nothing but exposition of what will happen if Dr. Evil, you know, takes over the world.
That's cool.
And they don't have it as a deleted scene or anything, but they said they wish they would have saved that footage because they said it was hysterical and everyone on the set had to be quiet to keep from laughing. And he just kept on going and going and going and going.
Yet another thing I would do if I had a time machine, go back and watch that scene.
What do you think about look at the three Austin Powers. Well, I guess we'll talk about the films as we go along. But I think in this first one, Elizabeth Hurley is maybe like the smartest out of the main Austin Powers girls.
She was certainly the most competent and the one that could get along without Austin.
Exactly. She also was, of her time, a piece of what military excellence or military intelligence had come to. Whereas each of the girls from the different parts of the series, they're each a product of their time, and they're a stereotype of that kind of super heroine, secret agent who's still only the foil for the male.
Yeah, Elizabeth Hurley was the only one that was Austin's equal when it came down to it.
And there are some parts of that movie that are so kind of beautiful. I love when he doesn't take advantage of her, when he gets her drunk, and she's all up for it. But it's like, and his whole talking about like the 60s and how times have changed, like about freedom. And then it's also freedom of choice, but also responsibility for that freedom.
Well,
I think he gives this wonderful speech.
Well, that's the other thing that the original Austin Powers had that none of the sequels has. It actually has heart and it actually has a point to it.
Yeah.
The film in its weird way makes an important statement about the sexual revolution.
That's what I really don't like about the third one, Austin Powers and Goldmember. That just, I felt that was a cash grab. I didn't feel any heart in that, or in The Spy Who Shagged Me.
Well, we'll get to those in a minute, but, you know, in between Austin Powers, International Man of Mystery, you know, he did Mike Myers did a dramatic film that I've always wanted to see but never have called 54.
Is that the title or the amount of money it made?
It didn't make that much money, yeah, but it was 54 based on Studio 54.
I've been sitting on that line for the past half hour.
Have you seen this, Jason?
Yes, I have. It was a great movie.
Okay.
It was so strange, but it also showed the excess of the time. And he plays Steve Rubell, the guy who founded 54, who made it famous, because what he would do is he would, like, tell all these celebrities, yeah, come on in. and then he wouldn't put them on the list.
Hmm.
So they'd be waiting outside, and like they had people, and he would come out himself, and he would just pick people from the crowd. So if there was somebody famous who wasn't getting in, Rick James couldn't get into 54.
Rick James couldn't get into Studio 54?
He could. There were times he could not. Eddie Murphy could. Michael Jackson, Liza Minnelli, Truman Capote, this little, he's more of a like an Algonquin table guy, is at a party with drag queens and half-naked bartenders who are high off blow. They're putting drugs in the air conditioner, in the air filtration system.
Oh, my God.
No. There was so much blow going on in Studio 54, and the way that it's shown in the movie really shows how much was accessible, how much was just given out, and then also what the books were for 54. Because yeah, you had your drinks and you had all that, you had that book. But then you had another book for how much drugs were costing you to put into the club and how much you were getting from dealers to be able to supply the club.
Hmm.
I mean, it's really crazy. And there were secret rooms where supposedly David Bowie and Mick Jagger used to have sex, and what's her face? Who was Mick Jagger's Bianca Jett? Not Bianca, that's his daughter. Whoever he was married to. I forget. But she, yeah, again, where she would just go and have sex with random guys, and Michael Jackson would be in a corner with a monkey watching. It's really fucked up, but that's how it happened.
One of my uncles said he went to Studio 54. He said he didn't remember a whole lot of it, but that...
Well, that's how you know he was there.
But that, he said, you know, they kept the lights off for a reason. He was saying, you know, if the lights ever came on, it would probably look really gross.
Yeah, and you'd be able to tell who was a guy and who wasn't.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, these other films I'm seeing on Mike Myers' filmography, between Austin Powers and Austin Powers 2, Spy You Shag Me, I don't recognize. There's something called The Thin Pink Line, and then a dramatic film called Pete's Meteor.
Okay, so Pete's Meteor.
Yes.
This movie...
You've seen it.
Holds, well, no, I haven't seen it, but okay. It holds a... But I've seen him talk about it on interviews several times. It is from this movie that we can credit the Scottish accent that he uses all the damn time now. Because when he went on that movie, he got a language coach... Because he had done like a comedy, he'd been doing a comedy Scottish accent for years, but he had a language coach for that movie to teach him an authentic, like I think Glasgow accent. And that's the one he's stuck with since then, which he now seems to insist on putting into every movie.
Although he did the Scottish accent before.
But it was the comedy then. Scottish accent. There was no authenticity to it. It was just doing this!
Right, right. So
now we can be a bit more subtle.
So yeah, so you're saying with Austin Powers' Spy Who Shagged Me, that one sort of let you down, Jason?
Yeah, it fell flat for me. I mean, there were just so many. The whole idea of time travel in it.
Yes.
It was very weird. They used product placement. There was so much product placement in the movie.
There's the Madonna song, right? She did a.
Beautiful Stranger.
Beautiful
yeah.
Stranger.
And that car was a Vauxhall Mini or something. It was like a VW. And yeah, and there was just, the performances weren't strong. I felt everything was, it was more ridiculous. It felt more like a commercial for a beer company that Austin Powers was doing.
Oh yeah, the fucking Heinekens everywhere.
Oh yeah. And, I mean, but to give you an idea of how much more successful this was in the theater, the first Austin Powers, you know, worldwide made something like $68 million, and the second one worldwide made $310 million, thereabouts. It was hugely more successful, as you said, Thrasher, from the videotape and DVD release.
But, I mean, it didn't have any heart to it, and it just really, in a way, I felt it betrayed the premise, because Austin Powers is a man out of time, you know, because of being frozen and revived. And yet at the same time, you then introduce time travel and then barely do anything with it. If you're going to be sending a spy from the 60s who's active in the 90s through time, you might as well send him to different eras and make the movies deconstructions of the spy and espionage thrillers of that era. I would have loved to have seen an Austin Powers movie that was a send-up of 1970s spy films, but they don't do it.
What about like the two main characters that are introduced in Spy Who Shagged Me? You have Mini-Me, played by Vern Troyer, and then Fat Bastard, played by Mike Myers.
Mini-Me was quite funny. Fat Bastard's overstayed his welcome.
Again, I do like Mini-Me for the fact that it makes Seth Green more interesting.
Yes.
Because, again, you had the competition for the love of Dr. Evil. That just sounded weird coming out of my mouth.
and going in.
And again, his Dr. Evil, even though Michael Myers has said that Dr. Evil is not based on Lorne Michaels, but the accent is an Ontario accent, which they both share. Lorne Michaels definitely has that kind of voice. Well, you're not going to like this, but when you're out there, I think you'll like it.
What does alternative comedy mean to you? Because I'll tell you what it means to me.
Well, does the pill work?
Well, there were a few flipper babies.
We're going deep here.
The film after Austin Powers Spy Who Shagged Me, Mike Myers, he had a small cameo in Mystery Alaska.
Good Russell Crowe film.
It was a drama.
And you know what? It's
Canadian
about
film.
It's about
or Alaska,
hockey.
Sorry.
It's about hockey.
Yes.
And Michael Myers loves hockey, as
right.
We will find out.
Yeah, and he just plays, I think, like a TV show host in this, in a very brief cameo. He's not in it very much at all, but it is directed by Jay Roach, who also directed the Austin Powers films. In 2001 was like the other big, I guess that's three big franchises that Mike Myers is in. You got Wayne's World, you got Austin Powers, and you got Shrek, which came out in 2001.
I don't know if it changed a lot of things, but it certainly got a devastating ball rolling.
Wait, devastating? What do you mean?
Okay. Here's the deal. I really like the original Shrek. I think it's a very fun movie. I think it's a very well-made movie. Yes, it's got some flaws, but the sheer enjoyment I got out of it more than make up for any of those flaws. That being said, I cannot stand anything that's come after the original Shrek. The spin-offs, the sequels, that way of making CGI movies that it spawned, I feel like it's poison.
Kind of true. And there is a musical. There is a musical on Broadway of Shrek.
Have
is
you
it
seen
still
it?
Going?
I believe so, actually.
Hmm.
And the other weird thing is it wasn't even supposed to be Mike Myers. Shrek was
supposed
to be... Chris Farley's big breakout film, but regrettably he passed away.
Well, they had recorded him doing all the voices for it, and then I guess, but they hadn't quite decided on what the script should be, and still had a little ways to go.
Well, as I understand it, all Chris Farley had actually recorded was the voice acting for a demo reel, which they used to show around Hollywood to get funding and to finish the animation, and that it was. It was after getting the official picture deal with DreamWorks, but before any recording was done was when he died, and then Myers took over. Although, as I understand it, Myers originally recorded the movie with a voice much like his own, then 80% of the way through decided, no, Shrek should be Scottish, and re-recorded all of his dialogue with a Scottish accent, but then they had to go back and reanimate the mouth movements from all the scenes with complete animation to make it match the accent version.
That's a lot of work.
But again, it launched an empire.
Oh, sure.
And,
I mean that.
And it's a movie that it got to be in another SNL alumni, Eddie Murphy.
As the donkey, yes. And in the morning, I'm making waffles. Yeah. No, he's a... I worked in the movie theater when Shrek came out, and that was, like, seemed to be the biggest thing that summer. It was absolutely crazy.
I'm trying to remember where I saw it. I must have seen it back in New Jersey.
So after
I do know that I saw it in the theater. Even though it was a kid's movie, and
yes.
I was clearly too old for it, this would have been my senior year, I saw it in the theater.
Well, I think before we continue, let's take a little break to talk about... our website at sequelcast.com, and as I mentioned earlier, you can go there to download other episodes of SequelCast Special, SequelCast, Sequel Commentary, and Video Game SequelCast. And also, you can, if you want to help out the show, it costs money to do a podcast. If you want to help us out, you can donate at sequelcast.com/donate to donate via PayPal. And if you want to We have affiliate links on there for Amazon.com that you can check out if you like, where you can rent a movie that we're talking about on the main Sequel Cast show.
Well, and that's smart.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, now we got Wizard of Oz stuff on there. So you can check out Wizard of Oz and Return to Oz as a digital rental.
Oh, man. You know what you should do? Okay.
What?
Get Dark Side of the Moon and then play it while you're watching Wizard of Oz.
I've always meant to do that, but I've never done it. No, I've heard it works, and I've
I've done it. I'm actually surprised we didn't mention that when we were doing those movies.
We should have. Yeah, that's like the most obvious thing. And also, you can listen to all. You can get Sequel Cast merchandise at cafepress.com/sequelcast, and you can listen to Sequel Cast Special and all our other shows at Stitcher Smart Radio. Get the app at stitcher.com/sequelcast, and all the Sequel Cast shows are added automatically as your favorite. So now
listen
back
to us on Stitcher.
Very good. So now back to our discussion on Sequel Cast Special on Mike Myers. So after the first Shrek, the very next year in 2002 was Austin Powers in Gold Member. And this one disappointed me a lot, like it did you, Jason. But I really love the first 5 minutes of this film.
Yeah.
Oh, the fake movie?
Where it's a fake movie. It all looks really crisp. Tom Cruise plays Austin Powers. You have Danny DeVito as Mini-Me, and Kevin Spacey as Dr. Evil.
I wish
the whole movie would have been that.
That would have been awesome. Part of me was really hoping they were going to commit to that. I think I've got to diverge from the pack with this one. While I do find Austin Powers Goldmember thoroughly unnecessary, I enjoyed it very, very much. I think the thing that saves it for me is that they learn from their mistake with the second Austin Powers film, so they don't even bother trying to have a point. They just decide to try to have fun with these characters and situations.
Michael Caine is nice as Nigel Powers.
Oh, man, that was brilliant.
Oh, yeah. Michael Caine.
I love that bit where they're both talking in their British accents, and they have to be subtitled, and they eventually are using like so much Cockney rhyming slang that there's no translation.
God, and you know what? Here's something that we didn't talk about. Robert Wagner.
Oh, yes.
Robert Wagner.
Number two.
He dies in every one of them, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. But then who played in the number two in the past was played by Rob Lowe? Oh, let me see. Okay. Rob Lowe. Rob Lowe played young number two.
That's right.
In The Spy Who Shagged Me. And then, of course, again, it's Robert Wagner and Goldmember. So you have at least these actors coming back to play their characters. So we must have had some fun. I mean, Mindy Sterling's in all three of them, Vern Troyer's in this one and the next one, though, again, Vern Troyer would probably be in it because of the money.
Yeah, but I think like the worst stuff in Goldmember is with Mini-Me and with Fat Bastard, with those characters, they repeat a lot of those same jokes that are from Spy You Shag Me in Goldmember.
Yeah, yeah.
And again, trying to get another set of catchphrases.
Then, of course, the other downside is that they introduce a blaxploitation character, but they never really do any kind of deconstruction of blaxploitation, even though they have access to a time machine.
I mean, Beyoncé Knowles, as beautiful as she looks, I don't think she was. I really don't think she acted as well. She definitely she didn't hold a candle to Foxy Brown.
She's not an actress. She does. She tries. I think she is trying her hardest, but she's not an actress.
I mean, she's better in stuff like Dreamgirls, but I think she's okay. I think they could have done more.
Will you go on the record as saying she is okay?
Yeah, I think Beyoncé Knowles is okay in Goldmember. I don't think
have you now, or have you ever been a member of the Communist Party?
No, but I mean, the titular character of Goldmember, played by Mike Myers, is just not that funny. I don't think.
Well, Dr. Evil, in his own way, is a very entertaining villain to watch, but Goldmember is just so unappealing. You can't stand it when he's on the screen.
He's obnoxious.
I thought he was ridiculous. Yeah. I thought he was ridiculous, but there was something about him that just was so screwy. I did like the concept.
Hmm.
Well, the concept was good, which is the execution, I think, was very, very flawed. I mean, he's greasy. He has acne. I figure they feel they should have gone for like a completely unaware 70s hip guy, but they didn't. He just looks so broken down. And then that whole thing where like his skin flakes, but he has that obsession with eating his skin. And he has, like, servants who take away his skin flakes in little cases.
Yeah. I thought John Travolta is kind of cute as Goldmember at the end. I don't know. And, like, and we haven't... Are you a bit surprised we haven't seen an Austin Powers film since? Because it's been over a decade since Goldmember came out.
How well did Austin Powers and Goldmember do?
Really well.
Well, you know what happened, though? After Goldmember, there was an Austin Powers animated series in development. A couple of the Simpsons writers and producers
right.
were involved with it. But it never got out of development. There's differing accounts, but supposedly a pilot does exist somewhere. But depending on who you ask, it was either never completed or so bad no one wanted to buy it.
Now, would you like to hear about some of our comments from our fans about Mike Myers?
Oh, absolutely.
From the Facebook page at facebook.com/sequelcast. Venetius commented that he felt that Myers made great classics in his career, early in his career with, like, I think he's meaning sort of like the franchise films like Wayne's World 1 and 2, Austin Powers 1 and 2, Shrek 1 and 2, and then made bad sequels of those same movies with Austin Powers 3, Shrek 3 and 4. In addition to films like Cat in the Hat and Love Guru, that having the same style of humor didn't have the same energy as the older ones.
Oh, you know what? That might. You know what? I'll agree with that. Yeah, energy. That's a key word.
Is it the characters being more fresh the first time around, or?
Yes.
Okay.
And when you're expending the same amount of energy to try and get jokes that are half as funny as they are in the previous movie, trying to push a catchphrase, which we've already heard so much, you got to come up with something new. The
right.
energy is just being sucked. It's a money grab. Sequels are almost always a money grab if they have nothing to say.
That's true. And we've talked about a lot of sequels.
What does Goldmember? What does that have to say about the human condition?
I don't think every movie has to say something about the human condition, but
a man needs role models. I don't know.
But sure. I mean, if a catchphrase is cool the first time, and if it's repeated ad nauseum. I mean, I don't think James Bond says shaken, not stirred 20 times in each James Bond film.
True.
Well, you mentioned that. I think they save themselves from catchphrase overload in Goldmember by inserting Austin Powers telling really cheesy jokes, which part of me actually really liked. I love it when a comedian totally commits to a terrible joke and completely owns it.
Also, Sequel Cast special listener Jared was saying his favorite Mike Myers film was Cat in the Hat, of course. And then later he said, I was just joking, I love Mike Myers. So,
Oh, wait, how? Doctor, let's talk about the Cat in the Hat.
Well, that's his next film.
I've got a comment.
Go on.
Listener and friend of the show, Beth Gilmer,
yes.
had actually, Jason, answered your question about laughing at Dieter. She says she's never laughed out loud. She found it amusing, but when she grew up and went to bars and met people who took themselves too seriously, then she got the sketch. Then the humor really dawned on her.
On Twitter, Sequelcast fan Ben Kane mentioned, you know, Wayne's World is his favorite Mike Myers film, which you already talked about. And yeah, that one's a real classic. I love the line in Wayne's World where I forget where it is, but like... it's something like Wayne is describing, like, oh, isn't a movie just a series of coincidences?
Something along those lines.
But the way it's, whatever the line is, the way it's delivered is very clever. I think that's my favorite bit from Wayne's World. So, yeah, I mean, Mike Myers' next film after Austin Powers and Goldmember was Cat in the Hat.
I have no idea how this got made.
Live action film.
Fiasco of the Grinch.
No, I do.
Well, the Grinch Who Stole Christmas exactly. made a fuckload of money, Will.
I didn't want it to. I tried to stop it.
I have not seen The Cat in the Hat because I'm too scared by how Mike Myers looks in the makeup as the cat.
No, it is. It's horrifying. His jokes are toned down, but they're so to the camera. He's trying to be ridiculous.
Uh-huh.
It's a strange voice that he adopts. The only thing that's really, really good about the movie is the art style does fit to Dr. Seuss. It's great production design.
Hmm.
And Alec Baldwin does an amazing job as this awful neighbor who's trying to bang the mom and get rid of the kids. Also, Dakota Fanning. Dakota Fanning is so brilliant at this age. She had to be, I'm going to say, 7 or 8. And she's just She's just killing it on screen.
Well, I have avoided this movie as well, although I have read a lot of very detailed reviews. And one thing that has jumped out with those reviews is that it's a film that has no idea who's supposed to be in its audience. Like, there'll be like a goofy slapstick joke, and then immediately after it, like an attempt at heart and moralizing. Then immediately after that, like a dick joke. And then immediately after that, a drug reference. But then immediately after that, some wordplay. And like, apparently, like, he goes off on a run where they're like in a garden and he picks up a hoe and he talks about how it's a dirty, filthy hoe.
They're like, it's like, we gotta have something for the parents to laugh at. We gotta have something for the kids to laugh at. They're not gonna get this joke. Thank goodness. No, because it's awful. It's just poor writing. And it doesn't really fit to the original book. The original book is actually good. It's all about how this guy comes in and can ruin your life. And just, if you let him. And there's all these structures of like, well, we can have fun, but we don't have to have this kind of fun. Or your fun's too dangerous. Or your fun's, say, I mean, you've got the, who does the voice for the fish?
In this film?
Yeah.
Sean Hayes.
Oh, God, yeah. Sean Hayes is really funny. But it's, it just doesn't, it just hits on some really sour notes. Just, I think because of Mike Myers mugging. He mugs too goddamn much.
Mm. And then it just commits the ultimate sin of featuring Paris Hilton as a woman in a rave.
Forgot about that.
Yeah, Paris Hilton cameo in your Dr. Seuss movie. Way to go, Hollywood.
Well, it does go to show, you know, the Cat in the Hat didn't do nearly as well as the Grinch Who Stole Christmas live action film. And then since then, any big Dr. Seuss film has been animated. You know, any of the big theatrical ones.
I think it's never
smart.
I had never been more happy that a movie didn't make money.
Oh.
I know that I know that's, it sounds like a real bastard thing for me to say, but I really felt like if this movie had succeeded, it would have meant a failure for the human race as a whole.
Did you ever see the film View from the Top starring Gwyneth Paltrow that Mike Myers had a small part in, where she's a flight attendant?
No, although I've heard it's actually delightful. Interestingly enough, from our friend Beth.
Oh, I have not seen this one either. But I remember him being in the trailer.
And Jerry Ryan's supposed to have some great lines in it.
Did you ever see any of the Shrek sequels?
I've seen several, but I don't know exactly which ones I've seen. I know I've seen the second one. I think I saw the fourth one.
I saw the one with Rumpelstiltskin. What number was that?
Four. Shrek 4.
Okay, then
after.
I guess I saw 2 and 3.
Okay, I saw Rumpelstiltskin.
That's the one where he pretends like he wasn't married.
No,
kids.
He signs a paper and he like gets done back in time, just like the Santa Claus 3, where none of the stuff that happened to him. It happened to Rumpelstiltskin. So Rumpelstiltskin is the one who gets all the fame and power
and a cut of the merchandising.
Yeah. Yes, which is exactly what happens in Santa Claus 3.
And that's the thing that really kind of frustrates me about the Shrek films, is that the first Shrek film, among other things, was a critique of animated fantasy franchises, and then it has completely become everything it used to critique.
I mean, I thought at least out of the sequels to Shrek, the fourth one, Forever After, at least tried to do something a bit more with the storyline. But Shrek the Third in particular, I just found painful about, you have a character, Arthur, that's supposed to be sort of like a King Arthur character, voiced by Justin Timberlake. And that
and
one,
Eric
especially.
Still do anything.
Yes, as Merlin, I think.
Although they waste him.
So.
Well, actually, here's something else. Yes. In 2005, do you guys remember when they were doing the telethon for Hurricane Katrina?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yes.
He was on with Kanye West, and they were making a plea for people to send in money for Hurricane Katrina, where from just the side, like just out of nowhere.
Wasn't that
Kanye
on the
West
MTV
said,
Movie Awards or something? Where
No. This happened as part of a telethon.
Oh, okay.
It had a whole bunch of stars, and they all came on, and Kanye West, standing right next to Michael Myers, says, George Bush doesn't care about black people. and the reaction that Michael Myers has is so funny, because he's like, okay, I just got sandbagged. I have to keep going. There's a sketch that he did on SNL with not Kim Basinger.
Locklear,
yes. Heather Locklear, where she's denying the Holocaust while trying to sell a blender. And he basically is like, whoa, he's ducking. He's ducking her verbal garbage. And he's like, this does not reflect on the product. This doesn't reflect on me. Let's go to a caller. And it's basically the same thing. It's like, oh, crap, now I'm going to be linked with this guy saying this. And it's just such a beautiful reaction in his face. I suggest everybody go to YouTube to look that clip up. You will see, like, a heartfelt reaction from Michael Myers that just does – it's just unparalleled.
If you can find that sketch, do a compare and contrast. It's delightful.
Now, what about the, you know, the most recent film that Mike Myers has, like, starred and written and stuff was The Love Guru in 2008.
Which is one I've been meaning to see only because I've been told it's so horrible.
It's not very good. I mean, it has a lot of hockey, as you mentioned, Jason.
He loves hockey.
Yep. And the climax takes place at a hockey game. Vern Troyer is in this one again, and it's almost like Mike Myers. He's doing his same like mugging shtick, and I'm not sure what about The Love Guru doesn't work in that, because if you would have called this Austin Powers 4 and had the same jokes, I don't know. There's just something about that character that's not. Is it nobody cares about self-help gurus? Was that a tired concept?
No,
by 2008?
I think he was also, because even though he was playing a white character who goes and becomes a guru, goes to India and gets spiritual.
Yes.
He's doing, instead of doing the Canadian accent, which is what this person would, he's adopted the Indian accent.
Right.
And it's not, people would say it's very racist.
Well, it is kind of a mixed bag, because as I understand it, the Guru Pitka, the character that the film centers around, is a character that Myers had been developing on stage in live performances for a long time, and it was all born out of when his father died. He went through this depression, but then had a spiritual awakening and became friends with Deepak Chopra. And
who's in the movie?
Oh, yeah, and just in the process of going through that spiritual awakening, he saw comedic potential in sort of spiritual leaders, and that's what he was trying to develop. And I think that's actually a brilliant concept, but the impression I get is that the film gets so bogged down in shtick that none of that makes it to the screen.
No, I can agree with you. Here's the thing is, I think if hockey was such a big thing, if you had left the hockey plot out of the movie and just made a movie about a guru trying to fix things, then you have then you have Holy Man. Never mind.
Although what's gotta suck is that in 1999, a film from India came out called The Love Guru, and I gotta wonder, did it suffer because of the Michael Myers one?
Oh no, because that movie's actually quite good. I have seen that one as well.
Really?
It's really cool. This guy comes to Hollywood to become a actor, but then he winds up working in an Indian store, and then he starts giving advice, and these people start to think, oh God, he's so spiritual. He must be this like big spiritual leader from India, because everybody knows that everybody in India is so spiritual. They all know the secrets because they're Buddhists and such. Oh, anybody who's Buddhist can become a teacher, which I think is true. I don't know. Is that a thing?
I thought the characters in that movie were Hindu.
Yeah, but the problem is that they're all white people who don't know what the hell they're talking about. So they bring him in as this guru.
Along that same theme, you should check out a documentary called Kumar Ray about an Indian guy who thinks a lot of the like yoga, self-help, New Age gurus are kind of bullshit. So he makes an identity for himself named Kumar Ray, and he invents his own his friends help him invent his own philosophy, and goes to a town in Arizona and tries to see how many people he can get to follow him before he reveals himself as a fake.
Red Museum.
If nothing else good came out of The Love Guru, there's a very entertaining episode of How Did This Get Made covering the film.
True. I've listened to that as well. there's some weird choices in this movie. First off, having Vince Troyer being a coach, but then also being abusive and being able to, like, any time that I see Vern Troyer attacking somebody and hitting somebody, like, really hard, it really takes me out of a movie because I'm like, I can't imagine him doing any damage.
Well, you know what's interesting, because I saw an interview with Vern Troyer, and he was really kind of praising this movie because it's I think the only movie role he's ever got where he's just playing a character, but the point of the character isn't that he's short.
Ah.
And we talked about this Matt and I when we were talking about The Hobbit and The Wizard of Oz and about how. Like just the casting of little people in movies,
right? Yeah.
And I do. I gotta give him credit for giving Vern Troyer just a role where he's just playing a guy. He's not playing the small guy. Although, as I understand it, there is a visual gag where he has the world's smallest office.
You know, I was really surprised to see the last thing Mike Myers has been on the big screen was a small part in Quentin Tarantino's Inglourious Basterds from 2009.
When I saw him in that, oh god, as the General Ed Fennec.
Yeah,
I love that scene. That is just a really cool scene.
I mean, he's just one quick
Winston
scene.
Churchill,
just doing a mission briefing.
Corner. Yeah,
yeah. And he's just doing his most over the top upper class British accent.
I remember when I saw Inglourious Bastards in the theater. You know, it's saying the credits of who's in the movie at the beginning, and it says Mike Myers, and a few people in the theater said out loud, "Mike Myers." And, like, when he came on screen for his one scene, everyone was really confused. Because I don't think you have a scene quite that broadly comedic in the rest of the film. Like, a lot of that movie I thought was pretty intense.
Well, what I love about the film is what comedy's in his cameo is all in his performance. He doesn't have anything funny to say. He doesn't have anything funny to do. And actually, when I saw that film in the theaters with Sarah, one thing I noticed was a lot of nervous tension in the audience when Mike Myers shows up on screen, as if everybody was worried he was going to break out into shtick at any moment and drag the movie down.
Oh, wow, okay.
Oh, that's... yeah.
So, I mean, we've covered basically all of Mike Myers' films on this episode of Sequel Cast Special. I don't think he's really set to do anything next, and I don't think they're going to do another Shrek movie or anything.
It says Austin Powers 4.
Well,
it's Austin Powers 4 with a bunch of question marks.
They've been talking about Austin Powers 4 since Austin Powers 3 Goldmember did so well. So I'll believe it when I see it.
Do we need more Shrek? Do we need more Wayne's World? Do we need more Austin Powers? Which one of the franchises is the most likely?
Maybe
Shrek,
Wayne's?
I think, is the most likely.
I could see him doing a Wayne's World. I don't know.
The thing is, I would, of all the franchises, I would most like to see a new Wayne's World movie, only because I'd like to see how those characters have grown up.
Well, did you catch on Saturday Night Live in 2011, there is an episode where they had as a guest a lot of people from the 90s, and for one sketch, they had Wayne and Garth on there.
No, I didn't see that.
Mike Myers and I think Dana Carvey was the main guest on that show, but they had
Was that in 2011?
That was in 2011, yes.
Okay.
And that episode is worth tracking down if you haven't seen it. Not just for the Wayne's World scene alone, which is pretty good, but I mean, they do John Lovitz is on for a sketch. The beginning, a bunch of the people from the 90s do a song and dance number about how the best cast was from the 90s of SNL. But it was a really, in a show that I don't think has been that great lately, it was a pretty funny episode. So track down that Saturday Night Live episode from 2011 with Dana Carvey as the guest for a good Wayne's World sketch.
Although, I gotta give him props for the J-Pop America Fun Time Wow sketches.
I think those are tired. I don't like those at all.
Well, I appreciate them because I went to college with those people.
Oh, me too. You remember what we're talking about, Jason? Have you seen that sketch? Where people pretend like they're Japanese and be like...
Yeah.
And pretend like they can... speak a lot of the language or just say everything really condescendingly.
Yeah.
I want a sushi, Deska.
What was it? The guy, you went to a Korean restaurant and there was a guy in there who said something like, you know, where from Japan y'all from, Daisune, or something like
that. Oh, no. This was in Atlanta and it was a Japanese restaurant in a strip mall that was run by Koreans. And, This southern guy just walked in and knowing some Japanese words, And he was like, "Ko wa non deshka, sushi desk." Like, I don't know. He was just saying practically nonsense, and the owner of the store was really angry because he was Korean, and the Koreans and the Japanese have a history of not getting along, to put it mildly. So it was, but I was just sitting there on the side at the restaurant while this happened, but I found that very funny and sad at the same time in retrospect. But hey, I mean,
isn't that all history is, just a list of people who didn't get along?
At the end of the day, I suppose so. Now, Jason, would you want to see another Wayne's World? What would you like to see Mike Myers do next? Another original character? He's got more money than God. He doesn't have to do anything, I guess.
I'd like to see another serious, semi-serious movie Soy Merit and X-Murderer.
I see, yeah. So
I'd like to see something where he deals with a family issue, but it's still somewhat funny. Kind of like, there's a movie with Nicolas Cage, John Lovitz, and Dana Carvey.
Is it like Stuck in Paradise? Something?
Oh, God. Trapped in Paradise?
Trapped in Paradise,
with Nicolas Cage is in it too, right?
Yep. But I'd like to see something. I would love to see something where he's caught in some kind of holiday thing. I don't know why that comes to mind, but I feel like him going home for a Thanksgiving would make a great Thanksgiving movie. I wouldn't bring it out on Easter because that would make any sense. But him traveling, I feel a Michael Myers traveling movie would be funny. The problem is he's not the name that an executive would say to me when I bring in that script. He'd be like, this would be a good vehicle for Zach Braff.
Yeah.
Or hey, that Zach Galifianakis?
But no, what you do is you just put Mike Myers in the title, so they have to use it. Just call it Miles with Myers.
I think Mike Myers has a few good, more good films in him, and I would like to see him on. I'd like to see him on the big screen again. It's been way too long.
If you're listening, Mike.
I'm sure he is. Okay.
You can crash on the couch this weekend. We got
any last Mike Myers thing before we close out? I think we've done a pretty good job covering his career here on SequelCast Special.
Well, looking over this list, I realize how few films he's been in. For some reason, in my head, he's everywhere.
It's because of the franchises. The franchises are everywhere, therefore he is. He is Shrek.
Right.
Even on the TV show. He didn't do the TV voice.
There's a TV show of Shrek?
Oh, they did like
the Halloween special?
Not the shorts. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, okay.
Like, they would do Shrek. They had somebody who would be like a sound-alike. Also, in all the commercials, it was always a sound-alike. It was never Myers.
Although, I guess he did the voice of Shrek for the Shrek 4D Adventure ride at Universal Studios.
And I believe Eddie Murphy didn't.
I don't know about that, but...
Let me look that up real quick.
Well, his brother stands in for him in a lot of voice gigs.
True. Charlie Murphy.
No, according... Eddie Murphy did Donkey in that ride. All the people...
Did?
Yeah. Okay. I've never been on the ride, but it's a whole bunch of the Universal Studios theme parks worldwide. So, hope you like
it. Oh, hell!
Two, right?
What?
You mean two, right? There's two. Not worldwide, there's two.
I thought there was some around...
I think there's only one Islands of Adventure where it plays.
No, there's one in Japan.
Dendaska.
And South Korea. Okay, well, hope you like listening to this episode of SequelCast Special, all about Mike Myers. You can follow me on Twitter at SequelCast.
You can follow me at InternetMayor.
Are you on Twitter, Jason?
No, but I'm on Tumblr. If you look up Jaren's 20, I am on Tumblr.
How do you spell that? Like J Aaron's 20?
Jaron's 20.
And hey, Decipher released an Austin Powers collectible card game.
What?
Yep.
That's bizarre.
But again, so much goddamn merchandise.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Think about how many things they made for Cat in the Hat.
Well, of
that
course.
Are now like his face. It's like there's a doll that looks like him instead of the classic Dr. Seuss illustration.
Sure.
There are toys from McDonald's. I had Austin Powers toys. They had Austin Powers toys at Burger King.
Well, you know what I and I don't know why I think this way, but whenever I see too much like merchandising of any kind, all I can think of is, you know, somewhere in the world, a child died holding one of those.
Oh, jeez. Oh, oh no.
That's terrific.
That's a terrible way to end this.
So for the tune in next...
Is the icon of death.
Okay, on that note, check out other episodes of SQLcast Special and our other podcasts like SQLcast, Video Game, SQLcast, and SQL Commentary over at SQLcast.com. Check out the Facebook page, facebook.com/SQLcast. For the SQLcast Special, this is Matt.
This is Thrasher.
This is Jersey Jason.
Saying...
Mike Myers is the avatar of death.
Mike Myers is the avatar of death. You've heard it here first. SQLcast Special is a Hipster Goblin production.